70 in 7. A win today, Hockey O'Clock. Original.
Win today, Hockey O'Clock.
In diesem Augenblick wird es jetzt richtig hitzig. Yeah, und die Scheibe kollert über die Linie.
Nee. Mittendrin statt nur dabei.
Das ist unglaublich, was die hier zelebrieren.
Nice move, another nice move.
It is indeed incredible for a seventh consecutive week. This is 70 in 7, a Hockey O'Clock original series dedicated to the hockey life or the legendary career of not only hockey lifer, hockey player, hockey coach, hockey do-it-all, Greg Holst, for the seventh and final time, coach. We'll have the pleasure of talking about your life this time around. It's the seventh and definitely not last decade of your being. Today, we're going to talk about the years 2014 to 2024, 1 week away from your 70th birthday. Up to this point, we've talked for 10 hours, 6 minutes, and 35 seconds. This series will be record-breaking in many ways, not only because of the listeners that have tuned in, but also because of the total duration that we've put up so far. We're going to break the record that was set in previous years, or last year, actually, with Marcus Pintner. We'll be talking extensively today about so many different things and also about things that we might have missed out on. So this is going to be a three-part episode. First part is going to be about the first half decades of your 60s and your late 60s. Then we're going to talk about the stories that we've missed, and then we're going to talk about the back half of your 60s. But without further ado, coach, always great to hearing from you. Looking forward to do this one last time.
Well, Martin, just like parts of my hockey career came to an end, this is our last podcast. It's coming to an end, and much appreciated, and it sure brought back lots of really great and interesting memories.
How have the reactions been so far? Because this has been one of the most listened to series ever. It's about to become the most listened to ever. Friends of yours have reached out. I've got so many great reactions either via social media or in person. How's the feedback been for you?
Well, you know, family and friends have listened to it in Canada and over here too. It's really interesting because me being gone for so long, a lot of the stories, even my family, including my parents, they didn't know that. Oh, I didn't know that story. I didn't know that happened to you. I didn't know that injury happened to you. So it's really interesting for them because I know my friendships aren't built on me being a hockey player, but when they see the things that happened through my career, they were somewhat surprised. So that's why I think the podcast has been really good, really interesting. And as I said, it sure puts me back a lot of years.
You know what, contrary to other episodes, I don't want to start like chronologically, but I want to start with an observation from a longtime player and now friend of yours that's got more to do with everyday business right now than with anything else. A four-time Austrian champion, we all know him, Gerd Prohaska, sent along this voice message. As always, for English-speaking listeners, I'll translate after we've heard from Gerd. And it's got to do with your passion for the sport and what you're still doing to hop along. Kids, especially Villach kids, I suggest we just listen in to Gerd Prohaska and then we'll discuss his voice message.
Man kennt Greg Holst als VSV-Trainer, als Trainerlegende, als Meistermacher des VSV. Man muss ihn aber auch kennen als Trainer, der nach wie vor mit seinen über 60 Jahren mit dem Nachwuchs trainiert, ja. Und ich bin ja jetzt seit einiger Zeit wieder als VSV-Co-Kommentator tätig bei den Livestreams. Und da sind wir natürlich immer wieder mal früher in der Halle. Und wenn man aufs Eis runterschaut, sieht man immer wieder einen Greg Holst, der mit unfassbarer Energie und Leidenschaft die U13, die U15, die U12 beim VSV trainiert. Und man merkt richtig, wie er vor Leidenschaft sprüht und diese Energie nicht nur aufs Eis bringt, sondern auch auf die Kinder übertragt. Und auch das ist Greg Holst, der nach wie vor seine Leidenschaft lebt und mit jungen Eishockeyspielern in Österreich aufs Eis geht und seine große Erfahrung weitergibt.
That was a four-time Austrian champion, Gerd Prohaska, who basically marveled at your energy and passion that you still have up to this day, because you're going on the ice regularly with junior hockey players from all ages, 12 to 15 to 17 to sometimes 18. And you just said you're relentless. And when preparing for this episode, I started wondering, where does that energy, that passion still come from? Why is hockey still probably the biggest part of your life?
Well, as my son Mike said once, I was the biggest kid when they grew up and we were playing all the sports. And it hasn't really changed. You know what's funny, Martin? I'll tell you a quick story. I watched the Super Bowl all night. And yesterday I went on the ice with the kids with the U13. Almost no sleep. So I get out there and the passion, the drive was there. If I can't bring the passion and the excitement of the game on the ice to the kids, I can't teach them. Because all the skill, all the systems, all that stuff, without passion and hard work and desire, is useless. So I love going on with the kids. I get them into my world. They look at me a little bit strange sometimes, but they go, they love it. And when they love it, that means I love it. It's just the way I am.
The last time we heard from you here on 70 and 7 on episode number 6, you had just coached Ritten, but there's a gap in your hockey coach CV in between Ritten in 11 and 12 and returning to Villach in 15 and 16. Naturally, a lot of fans and followers of yours are wondering what happened in between.
Well, I went back to Kelowna, and my hockey school after 20 years had long ended, or a couple of years earlier, so that wasn't doing that. I worked with the school board. So they now have like an academy in the schools. And they have ice times where the kids, instead of doing gym, they would have hockey practices. So I did that with the school board from September right to the end of school with Kim Gellert, with lots of guys, friends of mine, all ex-players. I did that for 3 years and it gave me also lots of time to do my workouts, to golf, to enjoy myself, but I stayed in the game.
Did you ever think at that point in time that you'd get back to Austria?
No, 100% not, especially at the coaching pro, or I was pretty set on, you know, staying in Canada until I got a phone call.
Tell me about that phone call.
In 2015, I guess it must have been early summer, or probably early summer. Peter Raffel had coached the U20 team and worked with the kids in Fialac for 25, 30 years after his career. And he decided to hang up the skates. He didn't want to do it anymore. So he spoke to Joe Meehan, he told him. So Joe had an idea to call me. And he said, Greg, would you be interested in coming in and kind of taking over Raffel's spot? And I said, excuse me. Well, I have to think about it. But I didn't want to coach a team. I just wanted to work with different groups. Crumpy, Lansinger, all those guys were all involved. I spoke to Crumpy a couple times, and I spoke to my girlfriend at the time. I said, what do you think? This could be kind of an interesting little venture. So I said, okay. So I took the job on in late August or early September in 2015. Now I'm back in Fialac.
How was it returning to the site of your biggest success as a coach so many years later with the organization that had undergone so many changes, where so many different things had happened to that point? How was it for you returning back to that site?
It was actually very strange, because even when I coached the pro team for 6 years, I still went on at times with Raffel with the U20, sometimes with the U17. I was still connected, watching young players, helping young players. But now that I'm there, not coaching the pro team, just working with kids, was really different, because you're missing that 24/7, that drive, that push to win under pressure, fans screaming. I miss that part of it. So I had to get accustomed to just working with the kids. It was a really interesting and not that simple transition. Even though I was working with kids in Canada, now I'm back in Fialac, where we had so much excitement for those 6 years when I coached.
Let us elaborate on that a little bit, maybe for first-time listeners. And yes, this is part 7 of 7. So in case you missed out on the first 6, please do listen to them too. But just to put things in perspective for people, again, who might be listening to this for the first time, what's the biggest difference, at the very least for you, when it comes to coaching pro hockey or adult hockey players and kids?
Well, don't forget, now I'm working with kids. I'm not coaching a team. But when you're coaching a pro team, it's 24/7. There's always excitement. There's tension in the air. You have headbutting with your players. You have big wins, tough losses. Pressure is on. Fans love you. They hate you. It never stops. So that excitement is exhilarating. So you don't have that when you're just working with the kids. You create your own passion on the ice and excitement for the game, which then translate into the players, how you run practice, how you talk to the kids. Talking to the kids and looking them in the eye and telling them the truth is one of the biggest keys to working with young players.
You get back to Fialac. You work with the kids. A couple of months later, you're the head coach. How come?
Well, my girlfriend at the time had come over, and I was very grateful that Cindy was her name. And she had come over to support me and enjoy European life, because I'm not under pressure of coaching a pro team. So we really enjoyed ourselves. Monday to Friday, I would work. On the weekends, we'd have time to go to Italy to do different things. Plus, maybe I would watch a kids game. We were at a game, and I knew Hanno, the Finn coach, had done a really good job for 3 or 4 years in Phila. But now there was pressure on. You know, time runs out. People get tough. The fans were on him. Now, they had this fan club that was really vicious, and they were getting on him. So I was sitting in the rink watching a game one night with Cindy. And down maybe 8 or 10 minutes to go, this fan club started taking off their blue jerseys and they put on their black outfits. This was awful because they were now attacking verbally, heavily, the coach. And I said, we have to get out of here. I cannot watch this. So we got up. This is amazing. I couldn't watch this. You know, I've been through it too, my first year where fans can be on you. But this was excessive. This fan club was horrible. We left the rink. I couldn't accept watching them attack this coach. So it seemed inevitable. Pressure is on management to make a move. So it was not in my thoughts to take over this team. This was not my plan. But they called me and asked me to come in and have a talk.
Please let us know or fill us in how the talk went.
Well, they said, Greg, there's two people behind this for me to even get this interview and talk. They were pushing for this, and that is Marcus Kersbaumer and Pintner. These guys were now involved in the team, assistant coach and goalie coach. They pushed for me to get the job. So I spoke to management. We sat down. What are you guys thinking? If I take this, I'm really not sure. What are the finances? How does it change my working with the kids contract? These are all the things you talk about. And we got to a point where financially wasn't fantastic, but it would work. And I said, guys, I need a few days to think about this because this is a mega step. So Cindy and I got in the car. We drove to Tyrol to see my boys. And I remember we went up to Hunskov, way up in the mountain. I talked to them before. We're sitting there. And I said, I think Taylor was there with his wife. Do you think I should take this job? I mean, it's a different life. I'm back in the grind. Both my kids kind of said, hey, Dad, maybe give it one more shot. So I thought about it. Talked to Cindy about it. Life's got to change. I didn't realize, or did she, how drastically I agreed to take the job and just finish that season.
It was an interesting time when you returned to coaching, because one might say that this was indeed the 15-16 season, the last time that Villach had a real Villach, a real Corinthian core. On one hand, aging stars like Gerhard Unterlogauer, on the other hand, established league players with Benji Petrik and Daniel Nagler, and then young and up-and-coming players like Alagic, Mühlstein, Brunner, Bacher. We all know their names. But you've been away from the game for 4 years. What was maybe the biggest change stepping into a locker room again and doing the daily business?
Well, very good question, Martin. And I'll tell you about our first meeting I had when I took it on as coach. And yeah, we had all those home guys. Lugie was a great player, Bacher, all these young guys. We had Hunter, Joner, Vihag, a real good Swedish defenseman, McKiernan, come out of college, McGill. This was his first year over here. Boy, What a career he went on to have and still has. We had also, let's not forget, the duel of Schofield and Pantsy. So we had a pretty good team, but there was a problem. So the first meeting, we're all in the weight room, everybody's sitting on the floor. J.P. Lamoureux was sitting to my right. I'll never forget this. And I started talking about, okay, I asked J.P. a question. Why do you play in Phylac? And J.P. is the kind of guy who speaks his mind, speaks very articulately, took his time. He doesn't say much, but when he speaks, people listen. And he went on to talk, if I remember, I can't remember exactly, but how he loves, you know, playing here. It's a great city. The ABCs of living and playing in Phylac, which I understand. So then I addressed the team. Because J.P. Lamoureux, for the last year and a half, was saving this team's bacon. 40, 45 shots every freaking game. So I asked the players, don't you think it's maybe time for you guys to now to start playing for your goalie? That was the first conversation we had, which means playing better defense, blocking shots, cleaning up a lot. Now, if you remember my first year in Phylac, when I talked about let's win 7-6, not 3-2, well, my whole view on that is completely different. I said, guys, if you play for him, whether it's turnovers, sloppy pinches, blocking shots, all that stuff, if we score 3 goals, for the other team to score 4 is going to be real tough. That became our mindset. Plus, we have to go to 4 lines to play high speed. Those were the 2 things we talked about.
And the great thing, it would eventually come to full fruition in the playoffs in one of the more memorable playoff series in recent past against the Vienna Capitals in the quarterfinals. I'll get to that in a bit, but I've got one great observation. I got one great story about you returning to the coaching business and something that happened on the bus. I know it's a bus league. I know it's a league where there are thousands upon thousands of kilometers that happen on the bus after the games, to the games, and your assistant coach at that time, Markus Pintner, he chipped in a story about something that happened quite regularly on bus rides. We'll listen into this and then we'll talk about it.
Die zweite Geschichte über Holste, da geht es um unsere Busfahrten, gemeinsamen Busfahrten mit dem VSV damals noch. Unser Busfahrer hat mir immer erzählt, dass während alle eigentlich schlafen, dass es ganz eigenartige Geräusche gibt und die machen ihn eigentlich komplett verrückt beim Busfahren, aber er weiß nicht, woher die kommen. Es ist so ein Kratzen, so ein ganz eigenes Geräusch. Und irgendwann einmal sind wir draufgekommen, dass der Holste energiegeladen, wie wir ihn kennen, auch im Schlaf energiegeladen ist. Und was er dort eigentlich immer gemacht hat, er hat sich ein bisschen Musik gehört, dann hat er sich hingelegt und auch wenn er geschlafen hat, hat er mit seiner Luftgitarre mitgespült und damit eigentlich am Reißverschluss und am Jogger gekratzt. Und das war so eigentlich für den Busfahrer ein unangenehmes, lautes Geräusch, dass er eben gar nicht gewusst hat, was es ist, aber passend zum Holste natürlich auch im Schlaf full of energy.
Has to be one of my favorite stories because Markus Pintner starts off by saying, during those long bus rides, there was a noise that kind of drove the bus driver crazy because he couldn't really pinpoint where the noise was coming from. And eventually they found out that you, after you kind of put in your headphones and started listening to music and doze off or maybe did fall asleep, you kind of started because you were full of energy and still are to this day full of energy. Maybe started playing the air guitar or whatnot, but you used to kind of scratch your zipper by doing so. And that after the bus driver finally knew where that noise was coming from, he was able to to focus on probably driving again. But yeah, just Marcus Pintner saying, even after you've fallen asleep, you're full of energy. It's incredible, and I can attest to that, because just a couple of weeks ago we shared an apartment, and you are full of energy, and there's not a lot of sleep anymore. So, what goes through your head when you listen to stories like these?
Well, I kind of forgot about that story, but when we talk about it's 24/7, even though you're in sleep, there's things on your mind. So it was probably a kind of a nervous twitch. Something was on my mind. And some of my friends say, Greg, even when you sleep, you lose weight. So that's the way it is. I'm not a deep sleeper. I could sure use one right now. But so many fun stories. And, you know, now that I'm coaching this team with Pintner, not as a player, as an assistant coach, and Kersbaumer as my goalie coach, these stories bring back really fun memories. And what a ride it was, one more time.
That 15, 16 year especially is an interesting one. Bad start, coaching change, you taking over, regular season doesn't really go the way a lot of Fila fans anticipated. And then it's a really close race, just like we're having this year in Winter Day Ice Hockey League, for the top six and the bottom six. Back then, the table or the standings were kind of separated. The top six played a round robin after 44 games. The bottom six played a round robin to come up with the last two playoff participants. You narrowly missed out by 1 point on making the top six. How was your mindset? How was the team's mindset after knowing you'd have to fight your way through the bottom six, where also Klagenfurt was involved to get to the quarterfinals?
Well, let me just backtrack just a bit. Okay, so I told you, when you coach kids, or you coach a pro team, it's totally different. So Cindy, my girlfriend, I said, it's going to change. But she didn't realize how much. I became a totally different human being. And I don't think a really good one. Because now it's 24/7. It's pressure, winning, losing, players on your mind. She would watch the difference in my personality when I took over the first team. It was like night and day. So it's the pressures of, I think, if I could go back and do it all again, you try to change it. But at this particular moment, it was tough for her because I became so focused on the job. Okay, so anyway, we come close to making the top six, correct? I mean, you're telling me stuff
one
I can't
quite
remember. We're standing, a bunch of the guys, in
you know
the
what?
Weight room.
Even worse, I'll fill you in. Vienna, fourth in the standings, or after 44 games in the regular season, Salzburg led the way, far and away the best team, 91 points. It's Linz in second with 85 points. Snoimo in third with 77 points, and then it's starting to get really close. Vienna in four, 74 points. Bolzano in fifth, 73 points. Dornbirn in sixth, 73 points. And Villach in seventh, 72 points. So we're talking about three teams being separated by 1 point and four teams being separated by 2 points.
Wow, so close. But we did make a good run. The team did start playing for J.P. Lamoureux. They did. Some players had trouble buying into the four lines. One import in particular. And we had to address it because if you double shift and Schofield sits, it doesn't work as we have to keep the speed up. So for the most part, we did finally buy in. It helped us immensely. I remember we had two games against Linz at home. We played some of the fastest hockey I've ever seen. It was so exciting. We lost one game in overtime and won the other one close, but the guys really bought in. Okay, so now it's a pick round. So we're in the VIP room, in the VIP room, a bunch of the guys, most of the team. It's on TV, who's picking who? Excuse me. We know and are hoping that Fehervar does not take us. The travel's tough. They have our number. They're a tough team to beat. But we were also coming on pretty good, so we weren't a bad team now. Fehervar comes up to their pick. They don't take us. Wow. Shocking. So now, if I remember right, you might correct me, Vienna. Vienna's pick. They have to take us or Linz. They picked Felak. And I believe that's how it went. Am I right on?
I have to correct you on a small tidbit. It wasn't Fehervar who picked second. It was Orlis Neumo, the Czech participant back in the day.
Zlojmo, that's the team, sorry.
Right, but Vienna indeed, in three, had a choice between Villach and Linz and elected to play Villach. And what I'm always wondering about and I'm always curious about is how much that feeds into players and coaches being motivated even more. Did you actively tell them, see, they picked you because they think that they've got a better shot at beating you than other teams? Did you use that as additional motivation?
What do you think?
Probably, yes.
What do you think? Well, how about mega capital letters, CHIP, chip on your shoulder? Thank you for correcting me on Zlojmo, because it was a hard place to play. We had trouble beating them. They were a really good team. So thank you for that part. Yes, extra motivation, of course. And their favorite to win. And what a series it was.
I'll give you the scores, the final scores of the five games that happened in the series. Just by the way, the one quarterfinal series that was over fastest was yours. All the other series went over six games. Yours was finished in five. Villach won 4-1. The scores in the games. Game one, Villach wins 3-2 in Vienna. Game two, Villach wins 4-1 at home. Game three, Villach loses 2-1 after overtime. Game four, at home, Villach wins 3-2 in overtime. Game five, Villach wins in Vienna 3-2 in overtime. There's that mantra again. Not trying to win by 7-6, but rather being satisfied with a 3-2 win. 3-2 wins. Can't be a coincidence.
Wow. What an exciting. Do you know that the games were fantastic, right? Game four. Or game five, the overtime win we had at home, that would have been game four.
Correct.
Do you know how we won that game?
Schofield,
a penalty shot like in the first minute or two, or first minute of overtime. I remember my son Mike was there and his whole team from Verbeek. So Scobie is now taking a penalty shot. This will put us up in the series 3-1. Vienna obviously did not like the call, which is obvious. Schofield goes down and freaking scores. I'm pretty sure he made the move backhand, went to the forehand. I remember it. The place went absolutely freaking nuts. Wow. What a night of hockey. What another. A couple months earlier, I'm coaching the kids. I'm picking up little guys, 5, 6 years old, and putting them on their skates. And now we're going to pandemonium in the freaking arena. Talk about exciting.
And all that after the bad start to the year, you taking over, you leading Filler to the semis. I want to get to everything that happened in the semis and the rafter in a bit. But just as I put it earlier during the intro of this episode, sadly enough, the last one of 77. I want to take a quick break. And then we're going to talk about some stories that still worthwhile to be told that we might have missed on so far. And then we're going to talk about the back end of your last decade so far, coaching hockey and spreading the word of the game. If you want to jump directly to that section, just look into the show notes of this podcast or look at the show notes of this podcast. There is going to be a time code that tells you where to jump to. But we'll take a quick break and then we'll talk about some of the stories that have gone, not missing, but some of the stories that we'll dig up from the previous 60 years. Back in a bit.
Win today, hockey, no more. Do you enjoy listening to Win Today, Hockey O'Clock? If that is the case, then please rate the podcast. A 5-star rating or a review over at the podcast dealer of your choice would go a long way in helping to spread the good word of hockey. Win Today, Hockey O'Clock, the hockey podcast with real and open-ended hockey conversations. Win Today, Hockey O'Clock.
Back on Win Today Hockey O'Clock, back on 70 in 7, part 7. This is the part where we talk about some of the stories that might have got lost with or by telling so many other stories. And Coach, I want to start off with someone we haven't heard from yet. A dear friend of yours, someone who's delivered some great stories, two of which we're about to hear on this episode. He's your, of course, golf coach. It's Simon Hottam. He wanted to chip in with a couple of stories. And this one's a story I think we haven't touched on, but you have to tell how this all came and went. I suggest we listen in to Simon Hottam and then we'll talk about it.
We used to go down to go down to the Drow. I sit in the sun Sunday afternoon, a couple of beers and chill, just chew the fat over this and that. And we'd always plan to go for one at the most two, but Greg and his stories and all the rest of it, we'd end up being there longer than planned. And he'd phone me later the next day and say, "Ah, you killed me yesterday, we're not doing that again." And there's one time he told me he played NHL in the US, went straight to the bar, they had shed loads of beers. And he met a girl and they went back to his parents. And he says, I think 6 in the morning this was. And you're going to take us to the airport. We're off on holiday for a month. He's crazy.
Crazy, I'd still say in a positive way. But that story that Simon related to or was referencing to, you meeting a girl, having her stay overnight and then making her drive you to the airport because you went on vacation. What happened there?
Oh, this was there's all kinds of stories like this, but this is a classic because I'm 29 years old. First of all, Simon's a great guy. He's an Englishman. So when the Englishman and the Canuck, that's me, get together, it's usually trouble. And We do have stories. We drink beers. You know, the Austrian mentality and, you know, personalities are different from the Englishmen and Canadians. Everybody's a little different. When we get together, boy, do we have some fun. And this story here, I was playing in, I'm still playing pro, I'm 29, playing an intermediate tournament with all my buddies. And we're playing, I think it was in town of Mount Royal. And I'm getting hacked and chopped, and I don't really need this stuff. It's a Wednesday night. I said, we had a beer after the game. I said, boys, anybody going downtown? Most of the guys can't. They have to work. So I hop in my Trans Am. I head downtown. I go to Sweeney's Pub. That's where the sports bar, that's where the Montreal Canadiens, all the athletes hung out. So I walk in there, and there's a girl working there named Joanne Young. I know her sister. Anyway, Joanne, good-looking girl. She's working behind the bar. So I start pounding a few beers, and I had a couple other drinks and all some more crazy stuff we're doing. Anyway, the bar closes like 2 or 3. We're still there, like at 5, me and her in the back. And I said, hey, Joanne, I got leather freaking pants on, leather jacket, leather pants. That was the European look, right? I said, let's take off. She goes, what are you talking about? Let's go to Florida. I said, she goes, really? Why not? I phoned my freaking mother at 6 in the morning. We're still going. My mother booked me 2 flights. I get back to the house, grab a suitcase, nothing in it. Me, my mom drove us to the airport like at 7:30 in the morning for a 9 o'clock flight. We're driving along. God bless your soul. She goes, you smell like booze. Yeah, no kidding, Ma. It's 7 in the morning. I'm still going. Get on the plane, and who's working on the plane is young sister, Rosalyn. So now we're in first class. So the party continues. I get to Florida. We get there. We are a mess. I get out. I got leather pants. It's freaking hot out. I got leather pants on, leather freaking jacket. The guy at the taxi looked at me like I was freaking nuts. She had probably a nice big coat on. Anyway, we spent the night. We went over to Sanibel. We spent 2 weeks on Sanibel. We decided, well, let's call this a day. I gave her some money. Joanne, it's been fantastic. She went over to Fort Lauderdale. I hung around a bit. I went over to Lauderdale, ran into her again, an old girlfriend of mine, all the guys from the hockey, from the Micron, the skate company. I turned that one night into 6 weeks. I got home 6 weeks later. Hey, I was single. What an experience, something you don't do every day. But you know what's funny? On Friday, we were in the semifinals. I don't show up to the hockey game. And the guys go, where's Holstein? Nobody's seen him. Nobody knows where he is. And it somehow it came out, well, where's Joanne Young? She's gone. She's not even at her job. They started putting 2 and 2 together, and they all said, oh, my God. Don't tell me those 2 crazy people are together. Yes, we were. And we had a great time.
When we talked amongst ourselves about stories that we still haven't hit or stories that still need to be told, you said, there's a referee story from your American Hockey League days that needs to be told. What referee story?
Well, can I just mention one thing before I talk about that, the connection with referees, how it used to be, how it should be? Remember when I talked about all my buddies in Pointe Claire? We all lived around the same area in Montreal. I forgot a couple of guys, so I don't want to leave anybody out. Because Gordy Armstrong, one of my very, very close friends, played for 5 years with Dave Henderson in France, and then played, I think he coached for 5 years, and became a really good coach in the academies in Montreal. And Blair Stewart, who played with George who lives in Norway, and Hendy in France, we all played on that junior B team. And Blair Stewart went on to play in the NHL for several years. So if you look at our little group of guys and where we all lived and ended up in the world of hockey, and we're still close friends to this day, it's incredible the connection you have through sport. But don't forget, we're not close friends because, and defined by hockey. We're good friends because we're all good people. We all relate. We have something in common. Incredible how this group of guys stayed together, got involved in hockey. Almost every guy played in Europe, and some still live there. A fascinating story.
Incredibly so. But the referee part, you left that out.
Okay. You know, back in the day, the referees, it's important to have a communication. And even if you watch the NHL now, Dave Jackson, a guy I played baseball with, became a really good NHL. We were friends. A real good NHL ref. It was always communication, right? They knew us guys pretty good. So one night, me and Satch, my brother-in-law, we're out in New Haven, and we're out partying. This is getting really late. Like, we're talking 4 a.m., 4:30. We're flying to Nova Scotia, Montreal Canadiens, foreign team, the best team, at 10 a.m. Holy loving. And we're going to play that night. This is freaking not good. We show up looking like, oh boy, what the hell happened to you two guys? Anyway, we get on the plane, try to grab an hour's sleep, get down. We get to the game, and we have to play. Because talk about guilty. But I said, I don't know how we're going to get through this. Anyway, the game starts. I think Satch had one shift, too. He got benched. So I remember him sitting up on the bench. The happiest guy I ever saw get benched. So anyway, I'm thinking, I got to get out of the game. I got to get out of the game. So I'm going to fight Buzziak. I fought him twice. He's a big guy, but I can survive. So I go after Buzzy to fight. Gloves came off. Guys all pile up. Wasn't much of a scrap, but the linesman and ref, they come in to break it up. Martin, I swear to God, I called that ref and those linesmen every brutal freaking name in the world I could call them. You know what they said to me? Holstie, you could say anything you want. We're not going to throw you out of the game. So get your ass in the box and spend your 5 minutes. Hey, the good old days, boy.
The good old days, indeed. I got a story from you being a head coach during maybe the good old days of the league that we're still covering, the league that will celebrate its 25th anniversary in a couple of months, basically starting next year. And one of the good old stories was delivered from, of course, your very good friend, Markus Kirschbaumer. It's so interesting because a very similar story was told by Herbert Hohenberger a couple of months ago here on Winter Day Hockey O'Clock regarding Ron Kennedy. And it's fascinating that the same thing that happened to Ron Kennedy eventually happened to you too. It happened in Falkirk. We'll listen in to what happened as told by Markus Kirschbaumer.
Dann gibt es natürlich auch eine lustige Geschichte vom Greg. Ich glaube, es war in der Saison 2003, 2004. Wir haben in Falkirk gespielt. Der Greg steht hinter der Bande und vor unserer Bande steht der Gerhard Buschnick. Und der Winnie Ratz hat den Gerhard Buschnick vor unserer Bank anvisiert, wollte den Gerhard checken. Der Gerhard war natürlich ein sehr, sehr schlauer und ein beweglicher Spieler, hat natürlich den Winnie Ratz kommen sehen und im letzten Moment weicht er aus. Dadurch hat der Winnie Ratz den Check nicht machen können und ist dann fast mit seinem ganzen Oberkörper über die Bande gekippt und hat dann im Zuge dieses Checks oder diesen missglückten Checkversuch mit seinem Schläger den Greg Holst im Gesicht getroffen. Daraufhin fiel der Greg von der Bank, Wir haben nur kurz hintergeschaut und gedacht, nein, ist ja nichts passiert, vielleicht wollte er nur ausweichen. Der Craig steht wieder auf und coacht weiter. Das war knapp vor Drittelende. Und dann ging es in die Kabine zur Drittelpause. Wir sitzen alle in der Kabine und plötzlich kommt der Craig rein und macht seine Pausenansprache. Und er hat dann so begonnen, Jungs, wir müssen mehr vortracken. Und schaut in dem Moment den Stefan Herzog an. Und der Stefan Herzog beginnt voll zum Lachen. Was wir alle nicht gewusst haben, bei dem Check, bei dem missglückten Checkversuch, hat der Craig zwei Zähne verloren. Das hat aber keiner gewusst. Und plötzlich hat er halt gehölzelt. Und ja, alle haben gelacht. Der Herzog hat, der Stefan hat vor lauter Lachen nicht mehr können. Wir haben das Spiel noch gewonnen und nach dem Spiel dann ist der Stefan zum Craig gegangen und hat sich beim Craig entschuldigt, sagt, Coach, sorry, ich habe nicht gewusst, dass du zwei Zähne verloren hast. Und ja, danach haben wir natürlich einen guten Lacher über die ganze Story gehabt.
As it happened with Ron Kennedy, who kind of lost his teeth or the thing that was holding together some of his fake teeth, you received a check while being on the bench because Gerhard Puschnik ducked away and you lost indeed two or a couple of real teeth. And the players didn't know, and when you had a locker room speech during intermission, you started doing this, and then everybody kept laughing without knowing why you started to talk that way. How vividly do you still remember that scene that happened at Falkirk a couple of years ago?
I remember it like it was yesterday. I thought those times were over. Not going to get teeth lost, broken nose. And I went down like a freaking ton of bricks. Bounced right back up. Knocked my bridge out and another tooth or whatever it was. And I'm looking down on my knees after for my teeth. Anyway, but when I did say that in the room, and I looked talking with a lip like this, and I said, boy, we have to. And I looked at Herzog and he just... Kershey's right. He started cracking up. But I remember saying to him, I said, Herzog, was ist so lustig? Well, you know, the room is on fire. But I guess we did go out, won the game. It's all part of the game. And I remember that vividly.
How big of a coincidence is it indeed that the same thing happened to your very good friend, mentor, one of the greatest coaches of all time, Ron Kennedy?
Well, is a script somehow written? How often things have we talked about? Well, why would that happen? Why did this happen? Is it a script written from above? I mean, who knows? But Martin, before we move on, can I just touch on, after we beat Vienna in overtime in game five, going back to that 15-16 year? I want to just talk about how great the fans are in Phillac. We lost Santorelli. He was a really good player. He got hurt. He was such a great passer. We lost him, and McBride had a bad knee, and he couldn't play. We knew if we took Salzburg, the best team by far, if we could score three goals, we could beat them. Anyway, we lost in six. And do you know the four games we lost, you know what the scores were? 2-1. Every game was 2-1. After our last game at home, we lost 2-1. I want to talk about the Phillac fans, how they honored what this team and what these players did.
You know what?
They had to go.
Yep. Save that for the next part of this podcast, because right now, we're still in the midst of stories that we haven't told so far, haven't been able to tell so far. And one last story that reached me that I want people to hear, again, comes from the four-time Austrian champion, Gerd Prochazka. We heard a lot about the highs and lows of you coaching, but Gerd's really wrapped his head around on what are the very low points. At the very least, that's what I think it had to be. Let's listen into this. Promise you this will be the last story on the second part of the last episode of 17-7. Gertz, about presumably what are the bigger lows of your coaching career?
Ja, man kennt Greg Holst sicherlich als Eishockey-Fanatiker, als jemanden, der sich enorm viel mit Eishockey beschäftigt. Seine Sprüche sind legendär im Fernsehen. Sein legendäres Interview vor laufender Kamera ist legendär, ist weit über die Grenzen Österreichs hin bekannt. Was man vielleicht nicht so weiß, ist, dass er auch Phasen durchgemacht hat, die nicht alle Leute wissen, und zwar, dass es nicht nur am Spieler manchmal schlecht geht, sondern vielleicht auch am Trainer nicht alles gelingt. Und das war in seiner ersten VSV-Saison der Fall. Ich kann mich erinnern, wir haben sehr schlecht gestartet, mit wahrscheinlich waren es, glaube ich, 10 Misserfolge in Serie. Und der Trainer war irrsinnig in Kritik. Und ich glaube, die Fans haben bereits gefordert, dass er entlassen wird. Die Zeitungen haben geschrieben, was da soll. Und ich erinnere mich auch, dass es Flugblätter gegeben hat, die auf allen Autos, wir sind einmal von einer Auswärtsfahrt heimgekommen, die sind auf allen Autos gewesen, rund um die Eishalle, wo sie eben den gefordert haben, dass der Trainer rausgehaut wird. Und ich glaube, das ist eine Phase, die man nicht so kennt von einem Trainer und die einen aber sehr mitnehmen. Und das ist eine schwierige Phase. Ich habe das selber als Spieler erlebt, wenn es einmal nicht gut läuft. Und ich glaube, das war die Phase, über die Greg vielleicht erzählen kann. Da ist es ihm wahrscheinlich nicht so gut gegangen.
Greg took us back to your first year coaching Villach. And it was an interesting period of time because you followed the legendary Ron Kennedy as head coach in Villach, didn't have a good start. And Gert remembers that one time or one day after returning from an away trip, there were leaflets, flyers around the arena that fans had put onto windscreens and basically everywhere that said, oust or fire the coach. How do you remember those kind of days, and how low of a low was that indeed?
Well, we talked about this in one of the previous podcasts, how that came about. Because we had moved Foster as the top scorer the year before. Just a lot of stuff happened, and he's one of the almost only player I ever moved, or we moved. But Rafa was with me, and we talked. We were having practice in Steindorf. And we had a real tough practice. We came out, we're driving home. I think we were 2-9. We had a lot of close games, but we were losing. So, of course, I'm in trouble. They think I'm a junior coach coming in. Anyway, I'm driving with Peter Raffo, and it was snowing a bit. And Raffo goes, what's on the windshield? It was plastic laminated. Well done, professionally done. On one side, it's all about Foster, how great he is. On the other side, it's all about me. I'm a bum. I'm a flop. And I presume when we came home from a road trip, probably shorter after that, it was on the cars too. So, Martin, I couldn't go out for a beer, like for 2 months. And because people looking at me, and you just go home and you try to survive. But that's when the team called me in and gave me 3 games, if you remember the story. And they said, you know, they're under pressure too, so they have to do something. So they said, Greg, we're going to give you 3 games. I said, well, how many do I have to win? They said, all 3, or you're fired. It was in the paper. I've got the articles. And I think we won 2 in overtime, 1 in penalty shots. We brought Sean Selmeser in, a tough kid. So if you don't stand up and fight, if you crawl under the table and give up, I would probably not be on this podcast. I probably never would have coached. It's a fine line. You stand up, you look it in the eye. Somehow I survived. We survived. We won the U20 that year. And that year, we made the finals. It was brutally a tough time. And I remember once, Mark, I was living at Herbie Holmberger's parents' place, a nice apartment up above them. I had this cough for 1 month at least. I coughed all night, every day. Then I go to the rink, push the guys, try to survive. It was freaking so hard, but you got to look it in the eye. You got to find a way. Otherwise, it's over.
You told the story about the ultimatum that kind of was set from management. I didn't necessarily remember the leaflet, the flyer story, as vividly as Gertz told it and you just reminisced about. But as we're rounding out this segment of things that we didn't tell, this could probably go on for hours and hours and hours. But is there anything left that you're dying to tell people out there? Because if not, we'll be moving on to the last part of the series.
Well, Martin, there's so many stories. You know, I could talk for hours. But let me just kind of, is it okay if I finish with that story about the Phylak fans after all of this?
We could have done that on the other part of a break too. Go ahead.
So when we lost, I'm back now after 6 years, surviving the first year, coaching 6 years, four times in the finals in 5 years, including a win. These fans singing my last home game in my sixth year on February 21st. They sang happy birthday to me, like 5,000 fans. I had a contract extension, but I didn't take. I never thought I would be back in this position again. So now 2016, game six at home, Salzburg. We upset Vienna. The fans are freaking going crazy. We lose 2-1. Salzburg, heavily favorite, wins. Our players had to go on the ice three times for standing ovations. And I remember I was up looking through the plexiglass where the players go off. And I think it was Schofield or one of the guys waved me on, because all the players now are standing facing the fans. And Martin, I didn't want to go on because it's the players. This was the third time on the ice after a loss, but they appreciated what the guys did. So the guys, a couple guys waved me on. Martin, I went onto the ice and got close to the players. I could hear the fans cheering, went up even louder. Talk about a great feeling of never giving up, looking at that first year, pushing the players hard, the players doing a fantastic job because it is the players, them accepting the push. Is this freaking unbelievable? So you wonder why I have a connection to Phylak. You wonder why I live in this town. It's, boy, unbelievable.
That story probably would have belonged to or should have gone to the third part of this podcast. We'll take a quick break and then we'll make people aware of the fact that they should probably rewind 30 seconds, a minute or two to listen to this too in case they skipped it. Quick last break here on Win Today Hockey O'Clock here on 70 in 7. And if you've skipped all the other breaks, this is the one you might want to listen to. This is about how you can support projects like these. Hear you on the other side.
Win Today Hockey O'Clock.
If you have listened to all parts of 70 in 7 so far, you will have spent more than 11 hours with Greg Holst and myself. If you want to ensure that long-format hockey talks or other hockey specials will continue to air on Win Today Hockey O'Clock, please donate to this cause. Please have a look at the show notes of this podcast, where you'll find a link on how to help making the next special episodes and special series happen. However much you're able to donate, all the proceeds go into research, production, and promotion of this podcast. Thank you so much in advance. But now, on with the show.
Win today, Hockey O'Clock.
Back on 70 in 7, part 7. We're talking about the years 2014 to 2024, the great hockey life that Greg Holst has already lived. These are the stories about the first 70 years, Coach. Hopefully they're going to be 70 more. On the last part, on the last segment of this podcast, you just told a great story about the Philadelphia fans from the season 15 and 16, the great series that you played against Red Bull Salzburg in the semifinals. Interestingly enough, Philadelphia had just one other semifinal appearance in all those years, happened 2 years ago. So you brought some success to the Philadelphia program again, but success that wouldn't continue to be there all the time. You stayed 1.5 more years in Villach, but what happened there? Why was it so hard to get back to that level of success that you had enjoyed during your comeback year?
Well, do you remember all the stories when I coached in Villach? How many years was my contract?
Always 1 year.
Always 1 year. If I'm not good enough, don't bring me back. Now, we have success. The city's buzzing. The fans enjoyed it immensely, what the players did on the ice. So here I am thinking to myself at 61, 62 maybe, 61 and a half. This is my chance. I'm going to go for a 3 year. First time. So we sit down. You know, money, I come back a little bit. That's okay. But if I can get a decent deal, gives me a little security. I signed 2 years with the first team and a third year to go back with the kids program. I said, this is perfect. This gets me to 65, basically. This is good. Not planning on getting fired, but it sure as hell didn't hurt me because I had a contract. So the next year, they made a huge mistake, and I went in earlier. We talked about this before in the podcast. Sign Schofield and Pansy. Get this, those two guys. I don't have a coaching job. I said, guys, whether I'm coach or not is regardless. Sign them. Anyway, they didn't sign them. Those guys moved on. But we did get, I think it was Urbis, we had some really good players. Oliver Wall was the Nets, and he was really good. I think he was in Ljubljana the year before. So we get into the playoffs, and now you have that round robin where I think two teams move up. There was 10 games, and we had the most points. Our first game against Ljubljana, we won 8-2. We are looking fantastic to make the top group. So we're going to be back in, and we're rolling pretty good now. Then Raw got hurt in that game, in the third period, and the season was over. So there was a huge loss, not blaming anybody, but it just affected our team. And we had so many close games, we couldn't squeak it out. And we didn't make the playoffs. And the next year, we go into it. I met a couple of the management in the summer. They tried to push me out. I sat in the VIP room. They said, Greg, go back to the kids. I said, well, guys, I have a contract. Yeah, yeah, but if you go to the kids, this, that, whatever. I said, guys, if you want to fire, this is after the season. If you want to fire me, but I have a contract. But they didn't fire me because maybe they didn't want to pay me. So I start the season and we're rolling along. We're not the best team in the league, but we're competitive with other teams. And you know what happened eventually. And you know who was against and how it happened. So if you have a question for me right now, just throw it at me.
I know the story. We talked about it many times. Other people know the story because you talked to them about it many times. Others, again, were part of the process and were there during the days when it happened. And that's why I want to bring in Markus Peintner, who provided so many great stories here on 17-7 one last time, because he reminisces about the days where the decision was made, the day when it actually happened, and his thoughts on it. For the very last time here on 17-7, I'm going to, of course, translate German, Markus Peintner's German, into English. So bear with us. Here's Markus Peintner about the days of Greg Holst ousting as a Villach head coach.
Die Geschichte vom Holsti bzw. Holsti-Rauschmiss habe ich schon ein paar Mal erzählt. Ein paar Leute haben es wahrscheinlich schon gehört und dann wird es nicht mehr so interessant sein. Aber es ist trotzdem etwas, was ich lange Zeit nicht vergessen werde. Nach einer Niederlage in Villach ist der damalige Präsident reingekommen und hat dem Holsti mitgeteilt, dass er nicht mehr gewollt wird bzw. dass er rausgeschmissen wird. Und gleichzeitig hat man auf mich gezeigt und gesagt, dass ich das Head Coaching Job übernehmen werde. Für beide sehr, sehr überraschend gekommen. Vor allem auch, weil ich die Position eigentlich nie annehmen wollte zu Beginn, weil das eigentlich nicht mein Ziel war. Ich war sehr gerne Assistant Coach unter Hanno Jemepe und dann unter Holsti. Schlussendlich ist noch der Präsident rausgegangen und wir beide sind durchgesessen und haben in eine weiße Wand geschaut und ich war mir eigentlich nicht sicher, was der Holsti von der Geschichte jetzt denken soll, ob er vielleicht denkt, ich habe das davor schon gewusst, habe ihm nichts gesagt. Ich habe nicht gewusst, ob er mir in dem Zeitpunkt vertrauen kann, ob er vielleicht andere Sachen reininterpretiert. Ich habe natürlich von dem Ganzen gar nichts gewusst. Trotzdem ist man sich nicht sicher, wie der Holsti reagieren wird. Und da sind wir wirklich 4-5 Minuten durchgesessen und ich habe nicht gewusst, was jetzt als nächstes passiert. Und irgendwann einmal habe ich gemerkt, dass er sich umdreht, den Kopf dreht. Ich habe seinen Blick gespürt und ich habe schon gedacht, here we go. Wenn der Holsti jetzt heiß ist und vielleicht die Situation falsch einschätzt, meine Situation falsch einschätzt, dann weiß ich nicht, ob ich da heil aus diesem Coaching Office rauskomme. Das Einzige aber, was er gesagt hat, ist, Pints, I told you, now I need 2 beers. See you later. Und das war sehr interessant, dass er auch in so einer Situation den Humor nicht verloren hat, vor allem auch die Realität nicht verloren hat. Er hat mir davor schon gesagt, es wird brenzlig, es wird schwierig werden über die ganze Saison, weil die Diskussionen um seinen Coaching-Job schon früher begonnen haben. Ich wollte es eigentlich nie so richtig wahrhaben, aber die Situation war wirklich trotzdem interessant und ich bin froh, dass ich heil rausgekommen bin. Schlussendlich haben wir noch 1-2 Bier getrunken, haben über alles geredet und das war, glaube ich, auch sehr wertvoll für ihn und für mich natürlich auch, weil der Holsti nicht nur jetzt beim VSV, sondern in meinem Leben mir sehr viel Erfahrung, sehr viel positive Energie weitergegeben hat und dafür bin ich sehr dankbar.
Markus was telling the story about the awkward situation where after a game, a loss in Villach, the president comes in, says, Holsti, you're fired. Markus, you're the new head coach, something he never wanted, and he didn't know how to behave. So he was just staring at the wall. He didn't know how you'd react. And you're like, Peintzy, let's have a beer. And you talked about the relief that you felt in this moment. And I think you also referenced the sleep that you were having the days and the weeks after, that it immediately got better, because as a head coach, you had to worry about so many things, couldn't really sleep. It's all about wins and losses. How do you look back on those couple of days?
Let me just add a little bit of something. So when I had the meeting, before I comment on Marcus's little talk, when I had the meeting in the before the season, and I said, if you don't want me, fire me. But they didn't. So do you think the writing wasn't on the wall? It was just a matter of time. And because we weren't playing that bad. We were in a lot of close games. We're playing Innsbruck at home. It's 3-2, I think it was. Oh, they score an empty net goal. Everybody's buzzing. So I come into the room, and I think Dr. Charpel, a good buddy of mine, he was in there. I'm not sure if Kershey was in there. Pines is sitting there. I'm not going to say any names. He walks in, says, hey, Doc, Vite, I'll say, Greg, sorry, you're done. Marcus, your coach. See you later. Before I left the rink, both teams knew I was fired. That's not how you freaking do business. This should have been kept quiet. We talk about it next day. Okay, Greg, we're going to make a move. Let me talk to the team. Wish them luck going ahead. How they handle it, I can take it. But that's not how you handle somebody or anybody who's put their heart and soul into this organization forever. So what happened was Marcus is sitting there. It was maybe a minute or two. You know, I'm just sitting there thinking, okay. And I said to Marcus, hey, Marcus, can you crack me open a freaking beer? So we had a couple of beers. And if I remember right, I said, Marcus, if we would have won tonight, it was going to be the next game. They're just waiting for me to lose a game. This is your chance to test it out to see if you want to be a head coach. You may as well take it and run with it. But anyway, that's what happened. So I phoned Cindy, who left early. She was at home in her pajamas. The doc came back in, Dr. Charpel, sat down. I phoned Cindy. I said, get dressed. I got fired. We're going to go down to the restaurant close to us, have a beer. Dr. Charpel's coming with us. So Dr. Charpel, me and Cindy, we went down. I walked in. A lot of people recognized me. They didn't say anything. It was kind of a very strange vibe in the air. And there it was. I got fired. At 63 years old, I finally got fired.
Now, you had another coaching job that you took. A very short stint, but it kind of is fitting because it happened in Zell am See, a place where you also had one of your first, if not the very first, pro offers. How much of a kind of bracket to your career, how much of a, not closure, but how do you look back on that stint, just knowing it all ended where it also could have begun?
It's funny you say that, because yesterday I'm thinking back, okay, what do we talk about? And, you know, if you look in elite prospects or you look into my career, I thought exactly what you're saying. It's like me and Ron losing our teeth. My first pro offer before Felak was Zell am See. And 20 years later, or whatever the number was, my last coaching gig for 3 months is Zell am See. It took me a long time to get there, but I took the job on. I'm happy I did. I met a lot of really fun people, good people there. we did a podcast this year. Even though we weren't as successful as we wanted to be, it's still remembered. You were there. What a coincidence how it all came about.
And this is why Telemzee has been doing so well the past couple of years, because all these good people that you mentioned, and we'd probably have to mention Patrick Schwarz here and Peter Dilsky and a lot more, they've been doing a fantastic job. And just the way you were let go in Villa probably also speaks for the management that was in place back then. A lot of things inside the organization have changed in Villa, I'd say, for the better, but that's from the outside looking in. A lot of very good, smart people now on the job in Villa. But after your coaching career had, or pro hockey coaching career had come to a temporary end in Telemzee, did you ever think on getting back? Did you receive a lot of offers these past couple of years?
I went back to Canada as planned, with no plans of coaching again. I can't remember. I probably did have a call or two somewhere along the way, or when I did get back to Austria, there was some interest from a couple teams possibly. I could feel that. I had no intention. It was time. I went back to Canada and spent some time there working with the kids again, enjoying myself, enjoying my house. Unfortunately, Cindy and me didn't make it all the way, but I can honestly say, you know, because you can't hold grudges and stuff, but my second gig in Felak, she really supported me and helped me get through it. So I have to thank her for that. Like I said, we didn't make it all the way. That's life. But I have to thank her for that.
But you see, without knowing her, I got a great story on Cindy. And that's what kind of leads to the last part of your being so far, the last part of things that you've done so far. I think it happened in 2018 and 19. You and Telemzee didn't work out, and we had Innsbruck in the playoffs. We, meaning the previous rights holder, the previous free TV station or free to air station that broadcast hockey games in Austria. And I, as a show producer, thought, hey, it might be neat to have Greg Holst on his old stomping grounds back in Innsbruck. And I tried to get in touch with you to get you to the show, provided you with some tickets. You gave an interview during one of the intermissions. And then it was about your expenses, because obviously you had to take a train to get to Innsbruck and whatnot. And Cindy, I think, sent me an email. Hey, these are Greg's expenses. Could you help me get his money? And I, of course, did. And then COVID hits, and the rights deal from the previous Winter Day Ice Hockey League rights holder ran out, and I didn't know what to do, and things like that. And Pause 24 comes along. And for whatever reason, they wanted me to be on the shows and do commentary. And they tasked me to put together a team of experts, a team of pundits. And my kind of vision always had been, I want to have a former player. I want to have a former goaltender. And I want to have a former coach. So having like the three most vital roles on a team, three different perspectives on the game, three different levels of insights. And by far the hardest was to get a coach, because in our league, not a lot of German speaking coaches have made it all the way. And then I'm thinking, well, maybe Kurt Harand. Then I thought, well, who knows? And then I'm I'm like, well, who's out there? And then I'm like, well, of course, Greg Holst. But in the summer of 2020, I didn't know at all how to get in touch with you. In comes Cindy. I'm like, well, there was this woman. She sent me an email. She got the, or she tried to get the expenses for you. So I'm trying to get in touch with her. What I didn't know at that time is that you'd been separated for an extended period of time. And as you said, didn't make it. But Cindy was kind enough to connect me with you. And then one summer day in the summer of 2020, we talk. You in Canada, I'm here in Austria. And I'm like, well, let's put it another way. What do you remember from that phone call?
Well, I, of course I remember it. I had sold my house and I was staying at a friend's place now. He had a room and a nice little TV room for me. And you phoned. So here I'm in between houses. What am I going to do? Buy a condo? Am I going to stay? What am I going to do? Maybe I'll go back to see my kids. I'm not sure. So you phoned and said, would you be possibly interested in doing this Pulse gig? And I said, well, what does it consist of? Okay, yeah. I had done a little bit with Premiere years ago, but not to this extent. And I said, well, yeah, I think I'm interested. And we talked about a few other things. And if I decide yes, how do we go about it? And you said, okay, well, we have to do like a rehearsal, like do part
kind
of
an audition, yeah.
An audition. And I said, okay, organize it. Let's try it. You know, and if you like me, we'll talk about it. And let's just say it's possible. And that's how it started. And you could go from there probably if you want. Because I have a good story too on our first, like when we did our first little gig on the TV, I think it was game six of the playoffs, Vienna against Klagenfurt, whatever it was. Do you remember that?
Shoot.
Well, we had to do it. I said, well, what are we going to do? Okay, it was game six, I believe it was, so one of the games in the finals the year before. Let's say, Vienna. So we're going
to
do the second.
Yeah, had to be. You're talking about the audition, yes. Of course. Yeah, yeah.
Yes, I'm talking about the audition. So we're going to do the first period of...
Yeah, let me just elaborate on that. Each and every
yes.
kind of candidate, each and every expert or each and every person who was aspiring to become an expert on Pulse had to go through the same quote-unquote drill. So doing commentary on one period and then doing an interview afterwards and all the stuff that came together. And it was an incredibly difficult period to do commentary on because there were no goals. So what we wanted to see and wanted to hear from aspiring pundits is how well do you cover a game when nothing quite literally is happening? So that was the difficulty of doing like test commentary on that period. But you being in Canada, in British Columbia, me being in Austria, we had technical issues to say the very least.
Yes. Okay. So you know how I did all my contracts, right? There was a method of madness behind some of them, correct? So I said, okay, so Martin, in a couple of days at this time, we're going to do this Zoom call. I had never done a Zoom call in my freaking life. I'm not that high with the tech stuff, right? So we're going to do the first period, for example. Well, I'm going to scout this game out. I'm going to watch the first period myself. So I'm going to have some ideas of what I see, little things like the cross check, not the numbers to the pants, little things that might be interesting to the audience that they might not notice. So I pre-scouted the period. So when we started, I was prepared. You don't know that. It's out now.
You cheated.
No, that's just called smart.
Okay, because everybody else saw that period for the very first time indeed, and you cheated your way into an expert job.
No, that's doing my homer.
You know what I remember about the audition, the test commentary that we did, that you had to jump in and out and get some help from another house over, someone who helped you with the Zoom call, with your tablet, with the video file, with everything else. And I'm like, Jesus, what have I got myself into? But then when we started doing commentary and you doing it in German, I'm like, okay, he's the man. And higher ups at the station, who of course had a look at it too, said, yep, he's the man. And the rest is history. We've been doing this for 4 years now. We were lucky enough to even do commentary on the National Hockey League for 1.5 years. The contract, as it stands right now with Pulse and the league, will run out after the playoffs. So if anyone's looking for an experienced TV duo, you're free. I'm free. I'd love to continue. I know you'd love to share your opinions on air for the foreseeable future, if your time and whatever you'll be doing after this permits. But just the other day, I talked to a franchise player in this league, and he said, every time Holste is on TV and I'm watching, I'm learning something. And I guess that's the very essence of it. Entertain and educate, something that you've really got down. And I do think this has to be one of the bigger compliments a broadcaster can get. And it speaks to your nature, speaks to the way you're conducting TV business. And who knows where it's going to lead to. Maybe you're just staying as a pundit here on the podcast. Like, every podcast you're on is really, really good numbers. This series will be record-breaking. And yeah, who knows where things will head to. But we've got one great playoff run ahead of ourselves. But just looking back on those 4 years, you doing TV in different roles, being a studio expert or being in a booth or doing interviews. How do you look back on those 4 years?
Well, first of all, I appreciate the player, you know, making those comments, because I know sometimes with fans who watch, they love you, they hate you, what you talking about, boom. But when a established player notices things you might say, one of the biggest things I think I see is the change of speed and how you sell the game. That stuff I really have a feel for, because I was a good player and I felt that was a key. But I thank the player or players for making those nice comments. Martin, was the script for me written from up above? Here I'm going to be 70 years old, which is hard to believe. Happy I got there after a few of those crazy nights back in when I was 29, was the script written? Kid growing up in Montreal, getting to junior, playing pro hockey, becoming a coach with junior players in a national team, coaching pro, getting into television, turning 70, the contract after 4 years ends. Was the script written? Talk about an exciting journey, which I'm very appreciative of. It's quite something. But I remember your phone call like it was yesterday, and it's 4 years have gone by. What I really enjoyed with you and a few of the other guys, we were a tight team, a lot of laughs. We had a great time doing the NHL for the year and a few months that we did in Vienna every freaking weekend, having beers after work at 6 a.m. It's all part of the team that we had that made this exciting. So it's not only in hockey or coaching about team, it's also in business, like our TV team with you leading the way, obviously, as the kingpin, was really, really enjoyable. I'm happy I did it, and we're going to finish strong.
I'm no kingpin. I'm just tiny little wheel in this kind of grand operation, just happy.
Well, hang on, I'm going to interrupt you. You always call me this legenda, which I laugh at. So you are the kingpin. That's the way it is. So you don't have to say anymore.
I leave it at that. But what we still have to do is have one last story. It's about, you could break down each and every story that we've heard so far on the pod and really break it down and ask, what's the moral of the story? And there's a great moral to this story. And of course, I like the way how it eventually ends. It's one last time that we're going to hear from your golf coach, from Simon Hottam. It's a story about your drive, your competitiveness, and so many other things. I suggest we're going to listen in to one last story here on 17.7, and then we're going to discuss it.
Hi, Martin. A story from Greg on the golf course last year. Basically, Greg and Kershie have these golf matches against each other, little bets that they've done for the last 15 plus years. And the winner more or less gets bragging rights more than financial ones. Anyway, so I'm on the range with Kershie and doing a few things, and Kershie asked me, hey, has Greg called you about his putting because he can't hold those short putts from a couple of feet? So I said, no, I've heard nothing from him at all. But anyway, conversation goes on. And later that afternoon, Greg's on the putting green, so I wander over and had a little chat. And I mentioned that Kershie said to me that he's struggling with those little putts. And he goes, yeah, can you take a look at it for me? So I take a look, thinking, wow, looks like watching a horror movie. And give him a couple of pointers to work on. And after 5 minutes or so, Greg goes, great, perfect, got it. Got to go now, I'll call you later. So next morning on the range, Kershie's warming up and before the game against Greg. And I tell Kershie that Greg was there yesterday afternoon, and we gave him a few little pointers to sort the putting out. So after the game, sort of see the one as they come off the course, and I think Kershie beat him and sort of asked how the putting went. And Kershie goes, well, it was all right for the first two or three holes and then back to being rubbish. And yeah, Greg came out with a comment or whatever, and Kershie says, well, he didn't practice what Simon told you to do. And what Kershie always says, he said, you were a great player, great coach, you worked hard to get somewhere, get results, and you basically tried 5 minutes and practiced 5 minutes after what Simon told you, laughing away. So the moral of the story, Greg, as you always say to me, you've got to work hard, put some time in, and earn those beers. Have a great 70th, mate, and see you soon. Cheers.
Couldn't wish for a better way to round this out. Your thoughts on this?
Oh, so true. So true. That putter of mine and me and Kershie, we are competitive. I tell you what, I have two quick stories, and I want to end with something that I want to say on this podcast. One time I'm playing with Kershie, and he's a really good golfer. And that little human being hits the ball 70 meters past me. And he looks over and he just smiles at me, right? So one time we're going down one of the holes and he's doing push-ups on the freaking, on the ground. I said, what the hell are you doing? No, just something to bug me, right? So another time we're in the playoffs and we go to play at 9 holes. And we're on hole number 12. I remember this. We're walking to number 12. And he said, Greg, I shouldn't tell you this, but I have to because you're the coach. I said, what, Kershie? He said, the players were out drinking last night. I said, are you freaking kidding me? I got so pissed off. And then I started to think. I looked at him. I said, you little bugger. You're just trying to put me off my golf game. True stories. But we have a lot of fun. And you know what? I'm going to mention the Fialak fans one more time because, you know, I live in Fialak now. I still work with the kids. Even after I got fired, Martin, the fans never, ever turned on me. They always appreciated the great times that we had. And for that, I'm eternally thankful. And you're right, management now, they're organized. Finances are organized, so they're on a good path. I could never have moved here to live here, to enjoy this city and some friends, be closer to my kids, if I wasn't accepted by the fans. That is just the way it is. So that's the last part of the hockey thing I'm going to say, but I would like to finish with something, if I may. Unless you have another question for me.
No more questions, promise.
Okay, so for me to score 1,000 points, over 500 goals, be in the finals so many times, so many highlights of my playing career, it wasn't just me. It was always the guys I played with. It was the teams I was on. Some of the good coaches I had. I'm very thankful for all that. And the success I had in coaching, also, it's about the players, the goaltending. Very thankful that I was able to coach some of these teams and some of these players. So I want to make that understood, that I'm very thankful, because you can't get to where you are if you don't have all these good people around you, players, assistant coaches, etc. And also for the DV, yourself leading the way, a good team, made our little four-year gig relatively successful and enjoyable. So now in my final words, I just like to say a couple things, because I know family, friends at home are listening to this. I don't want to be defined as a human being, as a person, because of hockey. I'm very thankful what the game has given me. It's taken me around the world, but I also feel and know I gave back a lot to the game. A lot of excitement for the fans, how I played, a lot of great moments, my passion as a coach. I received a lot and I gave a lot. So now I'd like to thank mom and dad for letting me chase my dreams. And at this point, being 70 years old almost, I hope I was a good son. And to my friends, all my friends in my life, different countries, especially the guys I grew up with, I'm not defined by hockey. We're good friends because we're all really good people. We have a connection because of sports, yes. We still have a great connection. I've met so many good friends. I'm very thankful for that. And last, Martin, the greatest gift hockey ever gave me was getting me to Austria and having my boys, Michael and Taylor. And I thank everybody very much. Now that puts a tear in my eye. And thank you, Martin, for doing this.
Couldn't be a better way to end this. Thank you so much for doing this. You've endured 12 hours of questioning, of looking back on your life so far. I sincerely hope there are so many more years that you'll have on Planet Hockey. I'm wishing you a very happy 70th birthday. It's in a week's time when all our 12 hours will come out in one episode. There'll be a couple of surprises attached to that. Promise to all the listeners out there. Thanks so much for doing this. Thanks so much to all the people who provided stories on your great life. Thank you so much to all the listeners who listened to this. Hope you enjoyed this. And coach, looking forward to all the things that we'll be able to do in the foreseeable future. Happy 70th again enjoy your big day on February 21st.
Martin, thank you very much. This was very special.
Win today, Hockey O'Clock.
Kurz durchatmen bei diesem Wahnsinn. Und das ging rasend schnell. Der Traum vom Finale ist erfüllt. Mittendrin statt nur dabei. Fans, stimmungsvoll und hoffnungsfroh. Nice move, another nice move. Oh, it's gone. Oh, what a goal. It doesn't get.